Hey guys, it's Mark Potter, publisher of Canvas Magazine, and I want to welcome you to another episode of Brushstrokes, a podcast powered by Canvas Magazine. Today's episode is brought to you by Conduit Incorporated, channeling content and connections. For all your custom content needs, visit www.conduit-inc.com. Guys, today my interview is with a gentleman by the name of Grog. Yes, that's what you heard, Grog, just Grog, one word. He is hopefully at some point going to be the symbol formerly known as Grog, but today he's just Grog, and he is the creative director for Street Level Studios in Chicago. It's a fabulous conversation. I think you'll enjoy it because it's someone who understands business combined with the fact that he is a creative, and he has great insight into your clients and what's important to them, how things have changed, and the challenges that face us all. I really, really enjoyed it. I can't wait to go to Chicago and sit down with him and suck the air out of the room again. But for now, I hope you enjoy a little excerpt of our conversation. So without further ado, take a listen to my conversation with my friend, Grog. Grog.
Mark.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I am I'm Wunderbar.
Wunderbar. Me too.
Well, how are things in Chicagoland?
They are fantastic.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. The weather's warm, the work is busy, and everything's good.
Well, that's awesome.
Certainly.
And business is good for Street Level?
Street Level is doing very well, yes. We are very busy right now. So,
how long has Street Level been around?
Street Level's been around for 30 years.
Really?
Yeah.
How'd it get started?
It was started by a fellow named Joe 30 years ago in Highland Park, Illinois. And he started a place, and it was at Street Level, so that's where the name came from. He had a storefront, and it was a shop he started as a design firm, and it grew from there.
So was it just him? I mean, was it he was designing, and did
yes,
he?
Yes, it was. He and his wife started the business.
Really?
Yeah.
And it's grown. How many people do you guys have now?
We have 12 now.
And how do you guys grow? I mean, how have you acquired clients over the course of time?
Some has been through word of mouth. Some has been, found through organically through our website. But a lot through word of mouth, which is really great because we have clients that are so happy with what we do. They then kind of give us recommendations to other clients, and then we do go about calling on people. So we do kind of go down those regular channels, but really I think what is really nice about this time and opportunity here at Street Level is that we do get a lot of organic growth from clients word of mouth.
Wow, that's cool. That's cool.
Yeah.
Are you I'm assuming, because I met you at a Canon gig, so I'm assuming that your business is not necessarily limited to Illinois. It's all over the place, huh?
It is. Okay. Yes, that's right. Yes.
And you've been there, how long have you been there now?
I've been here for 6 months.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. And so, all right, well, let's do this. So give me... We can't do this without going through kind of the 411 of Grog, right? I keep using that 411. I don't know. People don't dial 411 anymore. So
That's right, but I knew exactly what you meant.
Well, that's right. Well, you know.
I'm a little older than most. So.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we're wily veterans, so okay. I'm going to have to get a more millennial type word for 411, But give us the lowdown, if you will, on your career, and you don't have to go back to birth, but tell me how you got into the creative world, when you knew you were into this, and then maybe a little chronology of your career and how you ended up at Street Level.
Absolutely. Well, it's interesting. That's like a great question for me this year. as I was moving, I moved my flat files. So I have my big, you know, drawers with all my artwork in them. And as I was moving my flat files, this piece of paper comes floating out, lands at my feet, and I look down, and it happens to be a letter that was written, a memo from my first boss in advertising.
Yeah.
And it's got the date on it, and it said September 4th of 1986. And it was 30 years ago. And it was almost to the day that that fell at my feet.
Wow.
And I thought, wow, this is amazing. This is a great thing. You know, it's a great time for me. I started out at a small shop, and that's the one that where the letter came from, which was called Eisman Johnson Laws. It was a boutique agency here in Chicago.
Right.
I gave Michael Jordan his first commercial.
Oh, really?
It's an agency that did a lot of work with the Chicago Bears and a lot of local companies. Turned out to be a great shop, and that's kind of where I started my career.
Were you born and raised in Chicago?
I was born in Gary, Indiana.
Oh, okay.
Which is right around the corner.
Yep.
And I've always been an artist, always been creative, and when I went to college, I went to school here in Chicago at the American Academy of Art, and I just fell in love with advertising because it was about creating ideas with words and pictures, and I like to write as well.
Yeah.
And so I really, you know, when I first got into the business, it was just super exciting. And I loved every minute of it. And I just ate it up. And from there, I went to Footcone and Belding and to Draft Worldwide. So a lot of the big storied companies of Chicago.
Yeah.
Including Gray and then some small shops. And then I freelanced for quite a while. Which was nice because I got to go into a lot more shops than I normally would have being a full-time employee.
Right.
And worked with a friend of mine for a long time as a copywriting partner. And I was called up to a street level about a year and a half ago. And it was terrific. I walked in and they had an assignment for me, and I sat down, and I actually went to town with my pencil and paper instead of sitting on a computer, and they were fine with that, and I love that idea of, you know, ideas coming naturally through a pencil.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And we struck up a good relationship, and then they called me back in, and they had a position open, and I ended up saying absolutely, because what I really liked about Street Level was the fact that it is a small shop that is open and everybody works together as a team. And, you know, we've heard that before, but it's true here. It's such a close-knit team that everybody's open, and we all kind of comment on what's going on, and our projects are very mobile, and everybody can kind of see what everybody else is working on. So it's got a great flow here.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's cool. Well, there's a lot, you know, I got to go back through some of that and ask you. First of all, Gary, Indiana. What's Gary, Indiana like?
What's it like?
Yeah.
It's a steel town.
Yeah, it's a tough town, isn't it?
It's a tough town right now, yeah. I think the 70s really crushed Gary.
Mm-hmm.
I was born there in the 60s, and it was a pretty thriving town at the time.
Mm-hmm.
It was a small Chicago because it's only 40 minutes away.
Yep.
And it's an interesting place, but it's fallen on some very, very, very hard times.
Yeah, well, I grew up in Erie, Pennsylvania, and same thing.
same thing.
But the last time I heard this guy speak, and he was a he spoke to my kids. They play hockey, and they were down at Fort Bragg, and the guy had he was an inspirational speaker. He had no legs and only one arm. He stepped on an IED in Afghanistan, and he was from Gary. And he was telling me, and I kind of, we were talking, and he said something about, you know, yeah, it was tough. You know, Gary, Indiana was tough. You know, you had to be a tough kid. And you know, there's something to be said for being brought up. I mean, you know, it's a tough world, and maybe there's a, maybe you've got a little bit of a backbone if you're born and raised in Gary, Indiana. I mean, you need it, don't you?
Exactly, exactly. And I've always said I had a little rust and steel in the blood, because right. My family was they were all steel workers. So
yeah,
it's a tough town, and it's an interesting, you know, it's the heart of the Midwest. It's, you know, hardworking, blue collar.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
Tell me about, because I think there's lessons from that. I think that kind of stuff. And I think if you look back, it's interesting. It's a bit nostalgic. And when we look back and see when we were at our best and maybe when our toughest times and that kind of stuff. And you know, let's face it, the world and the economy is in a different place. And I serve an industry that, you know, is all kind of scratching their heads, like, you know, what are we going to do here? We've been probably scratching our heads for quite a while.
A little bit.
And so when I look at your career and I think about the times you were off on your own and freelance versus working for, you know, maybe a bigger agency or a smaller agency, what are some of the differences? You know, I've got people on our staff, and then I've got I do work with some freelancers, and I always wonder about how, you know, designers try to sell themselves. It's hard, right? It's, you know, you can't just say, hey, I'm really good at drawing, and there's the selling piece too. I mean, we're all right. In sales. So how did that go, and what differences do you see there, and what challenges?
Well, I think that, you know, as I came up through the business, it was, you know, when it first started out, of course, it was a lot of networking. That's different than it is today. Mm-hmm. I mean, networking is now happening on LinkedIn.
Right.
It's happening in different facets of the internet. And I think what helped me was that sense of the in-person and having those challenges of having to, you know, really go to the interviews and call people and make those connections.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, selling yourself in those ways sometimes really made you stop and take note of what you were good at, what your strengths were, maybe a little bit more than there is today.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that this business is about connections. It's about, you know, meeting people, doing great things, and keeping those connections alive. And I think that's why meeting you at Think this year,
mm-hmm.
it gave me pause, because I used to love the reps that used to come into my office, whether they were photo reps and illustration reps,
mm-hmm.
typesetters would come into the office. And so you got a sense of what was going on in the community, and you got your name out there.
Right.
And I think that was a big difference.
It's missing, isn't it? I was recently speaking, and it's such a weird dichotomy, because we crave it, right? We need the connection that you and I probably could have sat there and talked forever, and
right.
And you know, those connections are ultimately what fuel us, and it ultimately leads to business. It just takes time to develop chemistry, and it takes time to, develop a relationship in general. But more importantly, you know, we're all just cocooning ourselves. You know, nobody does it. And it's like a catch-22 in that I really have this sense that we all crave more connection, and those connections are where our business is typically generated from, but yet nobody's got any time for anybody.
Right.
Do you guys see that on the agency side of things?
We do. We do. I mean, it does keep you, the busier you are, the less apt you are to do those kinds of things and get out, but you have to really make an effort, I think, now to really do that and to really make those connections and try to get to your client in person and have those relationships.
How are you guys, how do you guys market yourselves? And you know, I'll ask you in a bit about how things have changed, but, you know, you talked about referrals. And, you know, I get that. But at some point, referrals also come from having a vibe out there. Do you guys do anything for yourselves in terms of having the vibe out?
Yeah, we do. We definitely are, you know, doing the Twitter feed, and we're kind of putting out, you know, we're building an Instagram. So there are the things that we're doing right now that we're really trying to, you know, go through the social networks and, you know, create and establish that new kind of vibe that you talked about, you know, and really and push that out there, because I think that's what differentiates us, is what we have to offer as far as our way we work and the people that we work with and for and together. So it's an interesting time to kind of, how does that work? Whether you're trying to do that through social networking or through events, things like that. So that's kind of where we're at. And
so that's interesting that you say that you differentiate, because I think that's a big deal. You differentiate on the people you work for. Mm-hmm. And so you define yourself essentially by the people that you serve, as opposed to the work that you do. Is that fair?
I think so. And that's the way I see it.
Right.
I really think that's the important, that's the key.
Right.
You know, people do work, and people do a lot of the same work. Mm-hmm. But the difference comes in how that's done and the communication that's done with people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the basis of our business. It's communication.
Yeah.
And you know, you were talking about selling, and I love that art.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of people don't, and a lot of people fear it or aren't good at it, but I really do love it. It's an interesting way. It's a puzzle. You know, I think a lot of designers are puzzle solvers. They're people that are really trying to figure out how do we do this, and what's the solution, and how do we get there.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that solving of that problem.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it is. It's hard. It's really, really hard these days. And you know, I go through it. And to develop relationships when you can't necessarily get the face to face, and when, you know, when people just are so busy, I think that's the biggest challenge. I think ultimately, when you can find people you connect with and you can have a shared vision of what you're trying to accomplish, then great. But getting there is a tough thing, and you're right. You've got to use all these other mechanisms, whether it is an Instagram or the social platforms, mm-hmm. or we do a lot of custom content in whatever the vehicle it is, and yes. But I really do like that idea of, or that concept of, defining yourself by, you know, the people that you serve, because I gotta believe that, you know, from a design standpoint, you know, I hate to say this, but in some level it's a commodity, right? I mean, every, you know, you can design a Picasso, but if the customer doesn't like it, then it's not a Picasso to them, right? And so it has to be differentiated by how close you are to them, and your ability to be so close that you can identify their problems. And do you guys talk about that, you know, strategically internally?
Yeah, we do. And I think it's another thing that's stressed here at street level is putting yourselves in the customer's shoes of the client. You know, it's going beyond what solving the problem for the client. It's really thinking beyond that. Mm-hmm. Thinking down their line to their customers. So if you can get into that mindset of thinking about their customer and what this particular solution is going to be, it has to resonate, obviously, with their customer.
Mm-hmm.
And so we push, you know, through the client, and of course we're working with the client, but the solution comes in, how do we facilitate through to the customer in a way that makes total sense for that customer and aligns with that customer's vision and their segment. So yeah. we really do try to drill down and get to the heart of that matter, so we can really work with the client on, well, who is this person, and bring them to life and then be able to work against that.
Right.
And I think that's a big thing.
Do you guys, and do you segment? I mean, or is it, look, we'll connect with anybody who needs design work of some sort, or do you start to say, look, we can start to lump clients, we're better for clients if there's some similarities, the analogy would be, years ago I talked to a guy who sold print, and I said, so who do you sell print to? And he says, anybody who buy a print. And I said, well, that's not so good. I don't think that's, that sounds ambitious, and I know that you're all excited about that, but the reality is then, there's no commonality between your customers, and when you have commonality, you can start to share those stories, and they start to know that you understand them a little bit better. Do you guys try to do that a little bit?
I think we do. And I think that comes through in some of our work and our expertise. I mean, when you take a big client that you've been working for years and have that relationship, you can parlay that into another client that also has, the same kind of depth and the same kind of workflow.
Mm-hmm.
It may not necessarily be in the same field, but it'll have that connection.
Yeah, you're right.
I think that's important. You have to parlay that into all your clients.
Mm-hmm.
And it does come down to, a mix of clients that really makes sense for the history that you have and what you've created.
Yeah.
And so we do that. Yeah, it's not just a broad.
Means you have to say no to some too, right? I mean, means
of course.
That ain't easy.
Difficult.
Yeah. I mean, especially when times are tough, you're like, oh, we could use the dough, and but at the same time, the long term view is we've got to make sure that we're serving the people that we can identify with. So. Let me ask you this. So, I want to get back to some of that stuff, but before we do, we can't go through this without talking about, the birth of Grog. All right. So, the audience isn't going to allow us to get away with that. We need to know, you were previously someone else, then you became Grog. Eventually you'll become the symbol formerly known as Grog, right? So
exactly.
You got to tell the Grog story.
All right, I will tell the Grog story. It is my name,
mm-hmm.
So I didn't make it up. it's one of three names that I have. So
that's awesome.
My actual name is Charles Voorhees Grog.
Ooh.
And so that's a mouthful, but I was known as Chip.
Okay.
For many, many years, and that included the ad business. And I decided about 5 years ago, I was talking to a copywriting friend of mine, and I said, listen, I really have never liked the name Chip, but I'm stuck with it.
Right.
She said, well, what do you want to be called? And I said, well, I really like just being called Grog. And my uncle and my aunt, who live in Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
She used to call my Uncle Bob Grog all the time. Hey, Grog, could you pass me the gravy boat? And
right.
And I loved that. I just loved the name.
That's
Grog.
Awesome.
And I just, it was so much fun, and it has such a memory for me. And it's got this great kind of character to it.
Right.
And I didn't think it was possible, so my friend Sally suggested that I make a logo, and so I actually rebranded myself So I took a bit of advice from my own business and rebranded myself and came up with the logo and changed my name to Grog. And I stopped using Chip and I stopped using Charles and I just became Grog. So I'm a one-named guy.
I love it. I love it. That's fantastic. Good for you. Can you look back and go, it's actually paid some dividends? It's one thing, I feel better about it, right? But has it branded you and people go, oh, yeah, there's that guy, you know?
Absolutely. That's cool. 100%. It's an amazing testament to what I do for a living.
I'm gonna
have branding and rebranding.
I love it.
And what it did was people loved the logo. They loved hearing the fact that when I went on an interview that I rebranded myself. So it connected me back to the business in a way that was very personal. Right. And I think that's what really stood out for a lot of people. And then, you know, it is a kind of a fun name to say. It's very guttural and caveman-like.
Right.
So, you know, even at Starbucks, I tell them to say it like you're a caveman, and it'll make you feel better, and that usually gets a laugh. But it is amazing how it has stuck, and I designed a pretty neat logo around it, and I think that also helped push it. But it is something that I think is a real neat, like I said, a real neat testament to the business of rebranding.
I love it. I think I'm gonna go with. I'm going to take a page from the movie Elf. I think I'm going to go with Francisco. Ooh, that's a fun name. That's a fun name to say, Francisco.
And I can see the logo for that now, too.
That's right. But I love it. That's great. And I think it's perfect in terms of just the creative mindset. So let me turn the page back to this wonderful world of ours. How have things changed for you guys in terms of what you do, right? I understand we've talked about defining yourselves by who, mm-hmm. but the stuff that you're doing, you know, 30 years ago, like you were saying, that the creativity dripped from the pencil or from the pen, and today, you know, and obviously it's kind of a leading, you know, to try to dig out where Print's role is in all this. But first, you know, what are the things that you guys are doing more today than maybe you weren't before?
Well, I think, you know, it's an obvious, the world has turned digital. And so,
right.
You know, digital has come up a lot. The interesting thing is that I see print not going away. And so it's kind of an interesting time that, print is definitely alive, and it makes me feel good.
Yeah.
But no, you know, things have, you know, we obviously do a lot of digital work. We're doing video work. So, you know, things have morphed into those worlds. But the thing that is constant is still there's still print work out there, mm-hmm. and I think that's a big thing. And though things have morphed and changed in the way we do things, and things are obviously now done digitally as opposed to markers and key line and paste up in those days. And, you know, we also do events, mm-hmm. Trade shows, you know, so those things are still alive and working, and those events also are generated with paper.
Mm-hmm.
Or with, you know, with printing. And so even though the way the business is done and how it's done, and it's, you know, obviously twisted to be more digital, I think there's still that heart of print.
Sure.
And so we're there because, you know, we do such a good job in those arenas, and we have the ability... We had the ability to shift into the digital and have the kind of staff that, you know, works on all of those things,
mm-hmm.
and has the ability to work on those things. I think that's very important, you know, as far as hiring people and the way that the shop has morphed. So.
Sure. Well, and you know, see, one of the things that pisses me off is this ROI thing and this addiction to immediate gratification, and and I'm sure you guys deal with clients, and it all boils down to, you know, you're dealing with marketers that, you know, in a lot of cases they're trying to validate their existence, and so, you know, they can't spend a dime without being able to go back to their boss and say, well, this is what we got. And, you know, they, to me, that's such an odd thing, and it's so almost false. And what it does is it leads to people doing more emails, you know, and they send more emails, and even on the social stuff, they'll do some stuff, and they're, and it leads to insincerity. It leads to, my gosh, I clicked on this, and then the next thing I know, I was solicited. So I'm never going to click on that again.
Right.
Whereas print has a little bit of sincerity, but it's still really hard to convince all these people. Do you guys kick that around internally at all?
We do. I mean, I think it is hard. I think what we're trying to do here is to really, you know, think about what are the things that the client isn't thinking about. What can we bring to them? What are the ideas that we can bring to them that they're not thinking about? They're busy doing all of the other marketing things that they have to do. And when they bring in an assignment, it's how do we plus it? How do we tell them, hey, you know what? This might be great as an email, but if we did a follow-up postcard, you know, if we had a stream of touch points that weren't necessarily digital or electronic, or, you know, how do we come up with those ideas that can help them grow their business in ways that they hadn't thought of? Sure. And I think that's the bigger thing, is to really bring the ideas back to them. You know, they have the assignment, they have the money, but what's that differentiator for them? And then they really, you know, they love that, because it then makes them look good, makes them look good to their bosses, and then, you know, we have come up with a solution that is beyond that ROI that you were talking about, beyond that narrow focus.
Sure, sure.
And starts that relationship with the customer.
Right, right, absolutely. Do you guys ever design or place ads for clients?
Yes, we do. Yeah, definitely.
Is that... how is that viewed? You know, what is your take? What is their take on advertising? You know, and I ask that because the old adage of, hey, I know 50% of advertising works, I just don't know which 50%. And you know, again, this whole push towards the ROI and the leads, you know, I'll let you answer that. But I said to somebody the other day, I said, you know, I was being facetious, and I said, you know, I get that question, you know, if I place this ad, what am I going to get? And, you know, my answer is, oh, well, are your phone lines ready to go? Because, I mean, do you have you manned up on the phones? Because basically you're going to place this ad and you're going to see a floodgate of calls. And it's not just going to be a call. I mean, it's not going to be, you know, they're going to be placing orders. So, you know, tongue in cheek, but I wonder what your clients and what you guys, how you view advertising in today's world.
Well, I think that it is different than it, say, was, you know, earlier in my career. It's definitely more targeted. You know, so we give a strong call to action that maybe wasn't there in ads in the good old days. As I would say, but there's still a place for it.
Mm-hmm.
There's still, you know, that communication through print that I think you get that is different with a magazine or a newspaper, and I think that clients are open to that, in the sense that, you know, studies have shown that people want to hold on to things and touch things and have that connection. And I think the print ad lives in that realm.
Right.
It lives in a real world where you can, and I you know, am saying this kind of tongue-in-cheek as well. It's interactive.
Sure.
But it's interactive in a way that's, you know, in the touch and in the look of it.
Right.
But it also has, you know, it carries a lot of weight, and when you do ads, I think they can really stand out in a way that's, you know, different than everybody else, but then still generate leads, and they can still generate calls. I mean, they can do that. They have the ability to do that.
Sure.
And sure. I think that there's, you know, to go back to that touch, it's interesting that a lot of you're seeing a lot of web companies that are just web-based, printing catalogs or printing books and doing things on paper that normally wouldn't be done that way. And it's an interesting resurgence. And there's a lot of studies about how touch affects people, and the, you know, using soft touch on an envelope for a direct mail piece gives you a sense of who that brand is. And it's sometimes the first time that people are interacting with the brand actually holding it in their hands, and I think that's a big thing.
Yeah, I do. I think that I remember growing up kind of in the industry, and it used to be, you know, you talk about paper, for example, and it's not the vehicle for which the message is traveling. It's actually becomes part of the message. And and maybe more so today than ever before. All right, well, so let me ask you this. So before I let you go, the printing community, and you know it certainly from the customer side, and you're probably a little bit different because of your history in the business, and you know, you said earlier that you enjoy having people come in because it's, you know, it's the human nature of it. We crave right. some of that, and it's perspectives. Certainly there are new generations that don't seem to be as open to that. Your advice to the printing industry, you know, you grew up in a steel town, and you know, the printing industry and sometimes mimics that. It's morphed pretty remarkably into the digital space, but from a recipe standpoint, the way they engage, they still use people. And so, you know, if you were giving them advice in terms of engagement with people like yourself or bigger agencies or bigger marketing organizations, what would it be?
Wow. It is a tough one.
Yeah.
I've talked to a lot of them, and I know a lot of them personally. And it is tough, and I think it's just really sending materials. It's you know, if you're not going to be able to get in through a phone call, people are going to, you know, brush you aside. It's sending stuff that people want to see. It's creating pieces that are unique and getting those into the hands of the agencies, whether it's, you know, you drop them off or you mail them, but it's got to stand out. I mean, we're doing this for a living. And so we want something that's unique, something that we haven't seen before. And it's got to have all of the elements that we were just talking about, touch and visual appeal, and what does it look like and feel like, and how then can you see that changing the business of who you're trying to get to. So, you know, I'm not sure what that is, but I've certainly had both paper companies and printers send me materials that I could not stop talking about. I could not stop sharing with my clients, you know, asking for more samples so that I could send them to my clients to say, see, this is what I'm talking about. This is where we can help you in these particular areas. And that is kind of my advice. It's really coming up with that piece that's going to have a certain effect on the designer or the creative that you're sending it to. And I think those pieces endure. They last. They're up on my bookshelf. I pull them down. I show them to junior art directors, junior designers. I think that's the recipe. It's a difficult task because, you know, you have to figure out what that is. And that's not easy.
It is. I mean, you know, it's just investment. It's investment of time. It's investment of dollars. It's and it is fascinating, the world we live in, that people don't necessarily want to do that because they feel like they have to justify. It goes back to what we were saying earlier, justify every dollar. I look at some of the best paper companies. You know, look at a Sappy. Have you seen the Sappy Neuroscience of Touch piece?
Absolutely.
Right?
And that's so, one of the pieces I was referring to.
Yeah, and it's probably the greatest piece to, you know, in terms of validating or supporting the argument for prints, the validity of print. And it's fascinating. And this guy, Dr. Eagleman, the neuroscience from Baylor, he's actually created I heard him speak, and he's created a vest to cure deafness or to help deaf people hear, because, and it's all touch. And so what a great, great message. And so you look at a Sappy, you know, and I actually started with them 100 years ago when it was S.D. Warren, and they put out stuff over the course of time that was educational. You know, they didn't put it out and say, well, I'm going to spend all this money and boy, you know, I hope I get something back. You know, I want to know, you know, exactly what sale I got back. You could look at that now and say their brand and what they did over the course of time has sustained them. They're one of the final few, if you will. And I think that's a big deal. And the ROI is not in the moment. And it is. It's hard, you know, because we're in that day when you just, people don't want to put that stuff out. But I think more so than ever, you've got to be relentless. And maybe that's your advice to some of these people, just to drive thoughtfulness and content and be unrelenting with it.
I think you've hit on it exactly. It also is getting people together. So let's say you send out, you know, and Sappy does this very well. Other paper companies that I know do it very well. You send out these pieces. Maybe you have somebody drop it off. Maybe somebody explains the piece. But then you have an event around it. Mm-hmm. You have a speaker who is going to talk about the piece. Kit Hendricks does a lot of speaking, and those are packed. They're packed with people wanting to hear how it was done,
sure,
wanting to hear the stories behind it. And I think that's a bigger thing, is if we can get people together. And it comes back to the beginning of our conversation. It's that kind of gathering people together. They're interested in it. They're going to come and see somebody talk. They're going to want to come and hear about a particular product.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that happens to be paper in this case, then that's what it is. And it's about the techniques. And it's about, again, what connects us are those stories that we can tell, the experiences that we have, how this was used and why it was used and how it might be used for your clients or not. I think it comes down to that next step. You know, it's coming up with that great piece, but it's then being unrelenting, as you said, and then kind of saying, well, listen, maybe we can have a small group over to the shop.
Mm-hmm. You know?
And I love when printers open their doors and have events. I think those are wonderful. And so I think that, you know, those are a lot of things that people can take in. I think Mohawk does a great job with their Maker magazine.
Sure.
Same thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, absolutely. And I love that. And, you know, there's an intimacy to print that is still there, and we've got to not be bashful about it. We've got to shout it at the mountaintops. Well, you got big plans for Thanksgiving?
You know, it's going to be a nice low-key Chicago Thanksgiving for me.
All right, so not going to Gary. Do you still have family in Gary, Indiana?
My mom lives in Valparaiso.
Okay.
So, yeah, right. She's just outside of Gary, but
all right.
Yeah, it's a nice little town.
But you'll be eating some bird.
Oh, yes, sir.
Yeah.
No doubt.
It's pretty much the best holiday because, you know, there's no pressure. You just eat, you know.
That's exactly right. There are no gifts.
Yeah, and there's no, it does, you know, I'm not a big, you know, the whole, when the holidays come around, I mean, it's, the pressure is so great that Thanksgiving's a big deal. We have a turkey bowl, you know, we start off with Bloody Marys in the morning. We've got about 30 people out there in the turkey bowl, and, you know, some of us pull a hammy, and then we eat some bird and fall asleep with our hand and down our pants. So it's
Mark, that's perfect. That's perfect. That's bliss, right?
That
there
is bliss. That's a holiday. Come
that's
on.
A holiday. Yes, sir.
Well, listen, I'm going to be, I'll tell you what, I'm going to ping you because I'll be in Chicago in a few weeks, and maybe you and I will steal away for either a cup of coffee or a cocktail, and we'll continue to solve the world's troubles.
That I would look forward to.
Grog, I can't thank you enough for doing this, man. It was great insight, and you know, you and I are going to be fast friends.
Excellent, Mark.
All right, brother.
I appreciate it.
All righty, you be good.
All right, pal.
See ya.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Brushstrokes, a podcast powered by Canvas Magazine. Today's episode was brought to you by Conduit Incorporated, channeling content and connections. For all your custom content needs, visit www.conduit-inc.com. My thanks go out to Grog from Street Level Studio. Also want to thank Tanya Freitheim, who is the owner of Street Level Studio, for allowing Grog the time to visit with us. And she's a close friend and someone who totally gets it as well. So I was really, really taken with this conversation. I thought that Grog has a good handle on business. He's from Gary, Indiana, so he's got a little rust in his veins, which is cool, and obviously is very creative as well. So again, my sincere thanks to him, and my sincere thanks to all of you. I wish you nothing but the most wonderful Thanksgiving, and hope you have a wonderful day with your family and friends, and I will be talking to you soon on the next episode of Brushstrokes. Take care.